Seeking mental health care can be overwhelming and even scary, but it doesn't have to be. I'm Dr. Josephine McNary, and I'm committed to making this process easier for you. Each week, my expert guest and I unravel a different form of therapeutic intervention in order to bring comfort and understanding and to help you get back to your true self. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Mind Stories. Today, I'm happy to have on as our guest, Dr. Natalie Feinblatt. Dr. Natalie Feinblatt is a licensed clinical psychologist in Los Angeles, California. She's in private practice and specializes in the treatment of addiction and trauma. She's an LA native who received her master's and doctorate in psychology from Pepperdine University. One of her trauma subspecialties, which she also wrote her dissertation on, is working with former cult members. Welcome, Natalie. Welcome to our next episode of Mind Stories. Today, I have on as our guest, Dr. Natalie Feinblatt. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, I know you have many specialties, but the one I know that we're kind of thinking about talking about today is this interesting work you do with survivors of cults.
Yes.
And so it's exciting to hear a little bit more about the work you do with that today.
Sure. You know, I've been working in the field of psychology for over 15 years, but I've only been in private practice for a little over five. And I didn't really get to work with cult survivors as much as I would have liked until I got into private practice. But it's definitely been something that has been a focus of mine for a long time. It was the topic of my doctoral dissertation. And cults have been something that I've been kind of a informal researcher and reader on for many, many years. So it's luckily something that once I got into private practice, I was able to kind of market or advertise more to that population specifically. So I have a good number of former cult members that I've worked with over the last 5 years and presently, and I am grateful to have the opportunity to do that.
And tell me a little bit about how you actually got involved into this type of topic.
Yeah, that's a question I've gotten a lot. And working in this particular area is very similar to working in addiction in this way, because my two main specialties are addiction and trauma. And the work that I do with former cult members is kind of, I look at it as a small subset of the trauma work that I do. But it's similar to the addiction work in that people, you know, when you work in addiction, people often say, well, are you an addict in recovery? And when you work with cults, people often say, well, were you in a cult? And that is not my story. That is not what got me into this. I have never been in a cult, which I am grateful for. I've had my share of issues in life, but that was not among them. What got me into it was that it goes all the way back to when I was 10 years old. My father worked in the film industry during his career, and he worked on the Tom Cruise movie Days of Thunder, which it's not one of his like better known movies, but it's the one where he played a NASCAR driver and Nicole Kidman was in it, and that's where they met and eventually got together. And so I was a pretty precocious 10-year-old. I was also an only child, so I was usually talking to adults as opposed to other children. And I remember when my dad was working on that movie that a lot of the adults that he was working with and that were friends of the family would talk about Scientology, you know, in relation to Tom Cruise. And I was a very curious kid, and I would say, what is that? And it was very interesting to me because nobody could tell me what it was. Even more so, nobody could tell me what they believed. Like maybe people were able to tell me it was a religion. Maybe someone used the word cult. I don't remember. But it struck me as strange that no one could tell me really anything much about it. Because if you ask about, well, what is Christianity? People can say, oh, here's what they believe. What is Judaism? Oh, here's what they believe. But this is a religion and no one knows what they believe. It didn't make sense to me at the time. So that seed kind of got planted in my head of like, what is this all about? And, you know, growing up in Los Angeles with a dad in the entertainment industry, Scientology would pop up and I'd hear kind of strange or wacky things about it, but nothing ever concrete. So fast forward to when I was a senior in high school and the internet started to become a thing on a wide scale. I remember finding search engines to be very interesting because, you know, as a curious person, I could just type stuff in and get a bunch of information. So finally, one day I was like, oh, Scientology. Maybe I can finally figure out what Scientology is all about. So I went to their website and I really couldn't get any information off of it. Like, we're good, we're a religion, we do good stuff, but like, what exactly? I couldn't figure it out. And so searching around the internet for more information, I eventually encountered the then small, but has since grown very much, community of former Scientologists that connect over the internet. And that's where I started to really learn the beliefs of Scientology, the practices of Scientology, and in a larger scope, what cults were, because former members were definitely identifying it as a cult. So that got my brain churning on this interesting topic to me. And like I said, for the next, I don't know, 6-8 years between then and my dissertation, it was just a topic. You know, some people are into true crime, some people are into history, some people are into whatever. I was into cults, mostly Scientology. It's the one that I know the most about, but pretty much any cult out there.
So what are common themes if someone who is a survivor of a cult kind of seeks out therapy? What are the typical issues that you focus on or that they want to focus on in therapy?
Sure. So typically, well, it depends on if they are somebody who joined a cult as an adult and then later left versus somebody who was born and raised in a cult. They have some similar issues, but they also have some different issues. For whatever reason, right now, I'm working with more former born and raised in cult people. So typically people in that position, unless their family has left the cult, which is not very common, they're dealing with a lot of family estrangement, family drama, for lack of a better way of putting it, having to set and or maintain boundaries with their family and finding it very, very difficult, or having to cope with being completely shunned by their family, which is also very difficult. They are also typically dealing with the issue of, and it depends on the group, but, you know, feeling like they're not really prepared to be an adult in the world, that they were, as a child and a teenager, so focused on being a part of this organization that things like higher education or job skills really fell by the wayside. And now that they're out, they're realizing that they've missed out on a lot and have a lot of catching up to do. And it's very overwhelming. And then there's also, and this is one that most people have in common, of figuring out who am I and what do I believe? Because often the membership in the group becomes a key part of their identity. And when you take that away, there's a void and a lot of uncertainty, as well as if they belonged to a religious cult, which not all cults are religious or spiritual in nature, but there's often the idea of like, what do I believe in? Do I want to have spiritual or religious beliefs? Do I want to have none? What feels safe? What doesn't? And then depending on the group, they might also be coming to me with more explicit and clear-cut cases of trauma in regard to having been physically abused, verbally abused, sexually abused. So those are the typical things that bring people to a therapist like myself.
Okay. Thank you for that informative answer. I have a few things. I'm just writing down things I wanted to ask you because there's so much there. Thinking about these are common things that come up, just not just with cult survivors, right? I mean, the first thing you mentioned was this idea of family estrangement mm-hmm. and kind of setting appropriate boundaries with family members. I mean, that's, I'm sure, a common theme that comes up in therapy
oh, yeah.
in people who are not part of a cult. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you approach working with that specific theme?
Well, it depends on the group that we're talking about, because there are some groups that encourage their members to completely cut these people out of their lives, as in we have no relationship, we have no contact, even parents and children. If the parent is told, you know, if your child is no longer a member of our group, you can't have a relationship with them, then it's done. So in that case, the issue is around acceptance, that this is the road your parents have chosen at this point to follow the dictates of the group, and the grief and loss around that, not knowing if and when you might have a relationship with that family member again. So in groups that require complete cutoffs, that's typically the issue. Another issue can be if they're allowed to still have relationships, the family is instructed by the group to constantly be trying to recruit the person back into the group. So you have a relationship, but it's not really much because all your family can talk to you about is the group and why you should come back. So dealing with the fact that you are constantly being pressured to do something you don't want to do, that you don't really have much of a personal relationship with your family anymore. So it really depends on what the family is doing in response to the dictates of the group and helping a person either build acceptance around that or set some boundaries of their own if they are not interested in certain lines of conversation having to do with the group, you know, having to enforce some boundaries around that.
Right. Yeah. And with any topic, and you know, it doesn't necessarily mean cult survivor, but in terms of trying to figure out what degree of interaction with your family mm-hmm. of origin is appropriate for you and your well-being and your mental health versus balance. Yeah. And I'm sure that's maybe a discussion that happens quite a bit, you know, with cult survivors or anybody in therapy, maybe mm-hmm. not therapy. The other issue you brought up is kind of this idea of, okay, how do you prepare for adulthood mm-hmm. if your upbringing didn't prepare you for a plethora of different options available mm-hmm. to you and having to navigate that adulthood on your own? Can mm-hmm. you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. I mean, again, I'm going to say this a lot, so I'm sorry for repeating myself, but depending on the group in question, it's one thing if a person gets a high school diploma, college degree, and then joins a group like this. And if they leave, their world is still shattered to a degree, but at least they have this education and potential work history to fall back on when entering the wider world. Whereas for some people who are born and raised in a group, depending on the group, there might be a real pressure to not seek higher education in the outside world. It might be like, well, get a high school diploma and then you work for the church. Or maybe we even homeschool you and then you become staff for the church. And sometimes people's only work history is through this group. And people in the wider world might see that on their resume as their only work history and be like, I don't know about this. So it's really difficult for those folks to. Often when you leave a cult, your first concerns are very, they're kind of the lowest part of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It's like, where do I live? Where do I get my money from? How do I feed myself? And if you don't have much of an educational or work history, those things become very complicated very fast. So that can be a real challenge for people. Plus, even if, let's say, somebody does have a high school diploma or a college degree, but they don't have much of a life outside of this group, again, it's one thing for somebody who had an adult life and joined to kind of rejoin that life. It's a whole nother situation for somebody who's literally never had a life outside of this group to suddenly be expected to make a go of it. It can be extremely overwhelming and frightening. And that's something that I've definitely worked through with people in therapy.
Right. It kind of, there was that show a few years back. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a comedy, but about how someone reintegrated into society.
Oh, was it The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. As funny and as more of a comedy as that show was, you know, it did have some good insights into that. Like, if this is all you know for X number of years, how do you reintegrate into the world?
Yeah. And I mean, maybe just kind of extrapolating past cult survivors. I mean, this could be a topic that comes up just in general trauma or child abuse or mm-hmm. figuring out, okay, this is all I knew. This is the trauma that I experienced, but these mm-hmm. were my attachments early on. And how do I navigate life outside of that as an adult? Mm-hmm. I'm sure with your work with trauma, you see a lot of that as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I don't know if you've experienced this, but oftentimes when people come to you for a specific type of trauma, they very much want to know, do you have experience with this specific type of trauma? Not just trauma in general, but like, you know, specifically child sexual abuse or specifically something else. So I do have a lot of people who come to me wanting somebody who is familiar with this specific thing, but I also agree with you, which is that I specialize in trauma on a much more broad level as well. I work with trauma survivors of all types, both family abuse, sexual abuse, disasters or crises, things like that. And there are definitely similarities across the board when it comes to trauma and trauma recovery. One thing I can tell you is that I work with quite a few people who come from highly dysfunctional and abusive families. And there are a lot of parallels between cults and abusive families. And sometimes the longer I do this, the more I think of certain families as like little tiny cults, you know, where it's very small and everyone has, you know, similar genetic makeup. And that's really the only difference between it and a larger group.
What are some of those similarities that you see?
Sure. There are a lot of similarities. I'll touch on three that come to mind right now. One is that cults very often control the members' social and or physical environment and definitely try to control their time at the very least. And abusive families can be very similar. People who've been in abusive families often report that they weren't allowed to go over to friends' houses. They didn't have much in the way of extended family, and sometimes even their family would insist on homeschooling them for the main reason of not wanting them to be exposed to other kids or other ideas of what family life should be like. And cults are very similar. Cults will monopolize your time and often want you to be with other members or at their facilities all the time in an effort to kind of isolate you from the rest of the world. So that is one definite similarity. Another one is that cults often create a sense of powerlessness in the member. If you weren't doing this, you're not going to go to heaven. You're not going to be saved. This is the one true path to enlightenment. You know, if you weren't doing this, you'd be completely useless to the world. And abusive families can be very similar. A lot of people who come from families like that are told many times, you're nothing without us. If people knew the real you like we do, they wouldn't like you. We're the only ones that love you. So kind of creating a sense that you're kind of worthless or powerless without this group of people. And then one more similarity is what Robert Lifton called the demand for purity. He's one of the people who came up with a list of criteria for abusive groups. And, you know, the idea of the demand for purity is that the world is viewed in black and white terms, and people are often guilted or shamed as a control mechanism to keep people in line. Again, highly dysfunctional and abusive families. Things are often seen in very black and white terms, both inside of the family and outside of the family. And shame is a very powerful tool in those families to try to keep people in line, keep people as a part of the system. So those are three of the similarities, but there's definitely more.
And I was also just thinking, you had mentioned earlier, there's a difference between cult survivors who joined at a young age or in childhood, mm-hmm. didn't really have a choice, versus ones who chose during adulthood. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about kind of the differences between those two groups of people?
Sure. Well, one of the big differences is the family stuff we talked about earlier, where, you know, it's one thing if you were born and raised in a group and your family is still involved, but you're trying to get out, that creates a lot of family friction. Whereas for people who joined as adults, often their issue is that they may have distanced themselves from their family or maybe cut themselves off from their family entirely. So oftentimes when they are leaving, there is kind of a reconnection process that happens. And another big difference is for the people that I've worked with who joined these groups as an adult and then left, there is often a lot of anger and shame around, how could I have done this to myself? How could I be so quote unquote stupid? I messed my life up. I wasted all this time, money, energy, et cetera, et cetera. People who were born and raised in these groups, they never had a choice. So most of the time, they're not dealing with this idea that, like, I really messed something up. But sometimes that anger is directed at their families or whoever was involved that got them involved at such a young age where they didn't have an option. So those are two of the big differences that I see.
Got it. And I guess it also something I probably forgot to ask you in the beginning, but this idea of there's this kind of a gray zone between cult versus not cult, right? There's mm-hmm. a little bit of a gray zone in terms of what the definition is for some people. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about kind of where that gray zone is and like kind of really where that line gets crossed?
Sure. And I wish that there was something definitive that I could point you to. At present, there's not. You're right. There is a lot of gray area. And depending on who you talk to, there's more gray area than not. The way that I look at it is, as I mentioned before, cults do not have to be religious. Cults are, and this is my kind of overly simplistic definition, cults are groups that abuse and exploit their members. And that can revolve around any ideology. That could be religious or spiritual. It could also be financial, self-help, psychological, spiritual, political. It can kind of be anything. You know, some people would argue that multi-level marketing companies are cults because there are some similarities in how they exploit most of their members and the way that they treat people. And so for me, the kind of the line of demarcation between like a insular or intense group versus a cult is, are the members being abused or exploited? If the answer is they are, then in my eyes, it's a cult. If the answer is no, it just happens to be a rather insular group or a group that has strange beliefs, but no one is being abused or exploited by any objective measure, then okay, then it's just, it's a group. It's a group of people, you know, that maybe have beliefs that other people kind of look sideways at.
Right. And I think if someone is in a cult and they're being abused or exploited, they may not kind of understand that that's happening in the moment. Then somebody gains some insight into that abuse. Is that usually when people decide to leave?
Yes. Typically, you know, leaving is often a gradual process. It typically starts on a very private level in their own mind and eventually grows into something they can no longer ignore, where they feel like they need to take action, which is usually leaving. But yes, it's typically when people come to realize that they are being abused or exploited, or even more so, when people start to see the cracks in the facade or the hypocrisy or the things that don't really make sense, that is typically what sows the seed of critical thinking. Like, I'm being told this, but the leaders are doing something different and it's being explained away, but it still kind of sticks in my craw. Doesn't make a lot of sense. That is typically what kind of begins the process of questioning, of critical thinking coming back online, and of people eventually, sooner or later, deciding, I can't do this anymore.
Huh. So interesting. If people want to learn a little bit more about this or have questions or are concerned about somebody that they know that possibly might be in this situation, are there any good resources or kind of good reads or good websites that you would suggest for people?
Sure. Yes. So my first referral, whether it's for friends and family or somebody who has left a group, is always the International Cultic Studies Association. If you just Google that. They have great resources for, it's kind of a catch-all group. It's for academics, clinicians, but it's also for friends and family, former members. They've got a lot of resources. They're always doing groups and putting things out there that are really helpful that I think, like I said, that's always my go-to when I'm giving people referral information. And in terms of books, I mean, the first book that always comes to mind for me, because it's my own kind of personal favorite, is Cults in Our Midst by Dr. Margaret Singer, who was a highly respected scholar in the field of cultic studies. I think it's a great book because it's not super academic, but it does a great job of exploring cults from all angles and has some good resources in it as well. So those are the first two things that pop to mind as far as resources go.
And I'll make sure I add those to the episode description.
That'd be great.
I'll also include your website so people can learn a little bit more about you and the work you do.
Awesome. Thank you.
Fascinating topic. And it sounds like you really have a great handle on this, not only how it relates to cults, but how it really kind of extends to other issues related to abuse and all other types of exploitation and abuse. So I really appreciate it. Any last words before we say goodbye?
No, I think that's it. Just thank you for having me on. I always appreciate the opportunity to talk about this because it's something I've been interested in for a very long time.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you joining us. All right, well, take care.
Thanks, you too.
Bye. This has been Mind Stories. With remote appointments in California and offices in downtown Los Angeles, Santa Monica, Hermosa Beach, Marina Del Rey, and Echo Park, Health Psychiatry specializes in medication management, mood and anxiety disorders, alternative therapies, women's mental health, and more to help you get back to your true self. Visit us at calpsychiatry.com. Thank you for listening to Mind Stories, and don't forget to subscribe.